Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to 7 Deadly Sinners early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Late nights at work taking a toll on your skin? Do you find yourself staring at those dark circles in the mirror? Well, it's time to meet your new best friend, Dark Circle Defense Balm from Lumen. Lumen is a line of brilliant men's skincare solutions crafted especially for men who want to look and feel their brightest. Whether you're a seasoned skincare pro or a total newbie, Lumen Skin has got you covered. Lumen's Dark Circle Defense Balm is a lightweight gel that absorbs seamlessly into your skin to brighten your under eyes and instantly plump dehydration lines. It's basically an espresso shot for your eyes. The best part? Lumen will let listeners of this podcast try the product out for free. Yes, you heard that right. Free. Head to lumenskin.com/wondery and get your free trial of Dark Circle Defense and their other amazing products now. Say goodbye to tired-looking eyes and say hello to a new and refreshed you. Don't wait any longer. Your skin will thank you. That's lumenskin.com/wondery for your free trial.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
He manipulated and coerced college students in the dorm room, including his daughter, just to perform terrible sex acts, forced labor, and he was ultimately convicted.
Welcome back to another episode of 7 Deadly Sinners, part 2 of 3, and I didn't intend it to be 3 parts, but I think you'll thank me, after hearing the escalation of abuse of this man, that it might just be too much to endure for one episode. I know it was for me. This is Larry Ray, master manipulator, an all-around monster. The man who started a sex cult from his daughter's Sarah Lawrence dorm. But more so than even a sex cult, it was a cult of torture, forced labor, and coercive control, and corrosive abuse. I think I just made up the term corrosive abuse, but that's what it sounds like to me. The kids he victimized are so broken down. In the videos Larry was stupid enough to record and then even post at one point, they're just so extremely hard to watch. So trigger warning, this episode is disturbing, and we will be playing a few audio clips from those videos, so please take care when listening. I literally had to walk out of the room when watching the Peacock documentary, when they started playing these videos. And when I went to pull them from YouTube for this episode, I just told Greg, like, you know what, you go ahead and watch them and choose which ones. I just can't watch them. They really, I don't know, they chill me. It's really, really scary what humans can do to other humans. So with that being said, let's get into it. Sources for this episode include an article in The Cut by Ezra Marcus and James D. Walsh, Wikipedia, the documentary Sex, Lies, and the College Cult, a Peacock original, an article in The Intelligencer by James D. Walsh, and The New York Post by Eric Spitzengel.
I Eyewitnesses say that as bank robberies go, this one was extremely well planned. But there's speculation that Patty Hearst may have been forced into all this because this woman's gun was also pointed in the direction of Patty Hearst.
As for my ex-fiancé, I don't care if I ever see him again. Stephen has shown himself to be a sexist, ageist pig. For those people who still believe that I'm brainwashed or dead, I see no reason to further defend my position.
One of Larry's victims, while not exactly kidnapped, bears similarities in how the law treated her to one of the most famous kidnapping cases in American history, Patty Hearst. I only bring this up to initiate thought and conversation on how one of Larry's victims would eventually face criminal charges. So if you don't know the story of Patty Hearst, I'm going to give you a short background for context. Patty Hearst is the granddaughter of American publishing magnate William Randolph Hearst. She was a young Berkeley student when a group of kidnappers from the radical group, the Symbionese Liberation Army, charged into her apartment and kidnapped her to show the world that they meant business. These big capitalists needed to know they weren't backing down from pursuing their goals of uniting all left-wing struggles, feminist, anti-racist, anti-capitalist, and others. They wanted all races, genders, and ages to fight together in a left-wing united front. And who better to symbolize capitalism than the daughter of one of the richest men in America? The Hearst name is on par with the Rockefellers and the Vanderbilts, and Patty would be the poster child for their movement. While in captivity, Patty describes her experience in her testimony at trial. Yes, she was arrested herself after participating in the SLA's violent crimes. She testified that she was held for a week in a closet, blindfolded, and with her hands tied. During this time, SLA founder Sin Q repeatedly threatened her with death. She was let out for meals, still blindfolded though, and began to join in on the group's political discussions. She was given a flashlight to read SLA political tracts to memorize. The only entertainment, I guess, while she was confined in a closet for weeks. She said, quote, Sin Q told me that the War Council had decided or was thinking about killing me or staying with them, and that I better start thinking about that possibility. I accommodated my thoughts to coincide with theirs. But in an account prior, dated to April 1974, Hearst said that she had been offered the choice of being released or joining the SLA. When asked for her decision, Hearst said she wanted to stay and fight with the SLA. The blindfold was removed, allowing her to see her captors for the first time. After this, she was given daily lessons on her duties, especially weapon drills. Angela Atwood, member of the SLA, told Hearst that the others thought she should know what sexual freedom was like in the unit. According to her lawyer, Hearst was raped by both of the male leaders. During her time with the SLA, she helped make improvised explosive devices. These were used in two unsuccessful attempts to kill police officers during August of 1975. Marked money was also found in the apartment when she was arrested 19 months after her kidnapping, which linked Hearst to the armed robbery of Crocker National Bank. She was the getaway car driver for the robbery, and a woman who was a mother of four who was at the bank making a deposit was shot dead by a masked Emily Harris, another female SLA member. Hearst was then potentially at risk for felony murder charges and could testify as a witness against Harris for a capital offense. At her trial, the prosecution suggested that Hearst had joined the SLA of her own volition. However, she testified that She had been raped and threatened with death while held captive. In 1976, she was convicted for the crime of bank robbery and sentenced to 35 years in prison, later reduced to 7 years. Her sentence was commuted by President Jimmy Carter, and she was later pardoned by Bill Clinton. However, at the time of her arrest, Hearst's weight had dropped to 87 pounds. And she was described by a psychologist in October of 1975 as a, quote, low IQ, low effect zombie. Shortly after her arrest, doctors recorded signs of trauma. Her IQ being measured at 112 was shocking because it had previously been 130. There were huge gaps in her memory regarding her pre-SLA life, and she was smoking heavily and had nightmares. Without a mental illness or defect, a person is considered to be fully responsible for any criminal action not done under duress, which is defined as a clear and present threat of death or serious injury. For Hearst to secure an acquittal on the grounds of being brainwashed would have been completely unprecedented. Patty spent close to 2 years in prison before Jimmy Carter had her released in 1979. So this begs the question, when you hear Isabella's story, which side do you come out on? Are Patty and Isabella victims, or victims turned criminals who deserve punishment under the law, or victims who deserve compassion for the roles they were coerced into playing, threatened into playing? I'll just say my opinion now. They're victims. In no way is there any evidence prior to being coerced into a cult or kidnapped into a radical group that these two had any intention to commit violent crimes. But I'll let you decide. The group of students were primed to be brainwashed by Larry. Not only was Larry a master manipulator, able to even con the FBI and baffle forensic psychological examiners, but these kids were searching for something to hold on to and believe in to ground them through their various emotional and mental life circumstances. Remember from last week? Larry was, quote, literally impossible to evaluate because he is able to manipulate and control almost any situation in which he finds himself, including a psychological interview with a forensic examiner, no matter how experienced that examiner may be. Mr. Ray is very good at what he does, end quote. So when Larry began holding court in the student's dorm, presenting himself as some sort of life coach and rogue mental health expert, the students were drawn to this new father figure in their life. Little did they know, Larry was manipulating them and soon eventually torturing them in basically every way possible. The students, who all had bright futures, and my hope is that they've recovered and still do, are Talia, his own daughter, who he groomed and brainwashed her entire life. Then there's Isabella, who was so smart that she earned a full academic scholarship to Sarah Lawrence when she graduated from an all-girls Catholic school in Texas. She was just 19 when Larry began grooming and brainwashing her, eventually escalating into a full-on sexual and emotional relationship. And worse, Isabella became an active participant in Larry's torture of the other students. We will go so much further into that in part 3, but keep that Patty Hearst story in mind when we do. Then there was Claudia. Claudia grew up outside Los Angeles and was described as a bit of a theatrical and emotional girl. According to The Cut, her high school friends describe her as smart and creative and said, "I think what she was best at was telling stories." Also according to The Cut, sometimes Claudia stretched the truth for effect, though in innocent ways. Her friends called her out for claiming to like a band she never listened to. Another time, she pretended to faint in Spanish class. Her friends said she just wanted to make herself more exciting. Maybe excitement was what she was looking for in this newfound presence in their world. Larry himself could tell a good tale. Then there was Daniel. According to the cut, and I'm just going to read this directly because they've done extensive research and spoken to the people, which I've tried to reach out to Daniel, well, tried to research how to. I simply can't find his contact information. But quote, Daniel, too, had initially found Larry's philosophical musings incoherent and thought Claudia's newfound trust in his amateur mental health counseling, he thought it seemed weird. Quote, Claudia definitely had some complex issues. She had real stuff going on, Daniel says. It was all stuff that a therapist would really be the right person to turn to. But Larry claimed to have some superhuman level of empathy or ability to talk to young people and help them work through their issues. Near the end of the school year, Daniel found himself unmoored. His relationship with his girlfriend was crumbling and he had nowhere to live that summer. Santos and Claudia urged him to speak with Larry. The two met at a Starbucks one afternoon and talked for hours. Larry gave him advice that felt refreshingly straightforward. Dump your girlfriend on the question of Daniel's sexuality. Larry shut down the suggestion conclusively. Oh no, you're not gay, he said. I can tell that for sure. Daniel says, quote, I was directionless, and suddenly this real man came into my life. It was this incredible feeling of such intense validation of being seen and heard finally. Larry offered to help Daniel achieve clarity after their conversation. Larry then walked Daniel outside and into a limousine, idling up at the block where his roommates were waiting. They went to the apartment on East 93rd Street, and when they arrived, Larry suggested Daniel live there for the summer with him and some of the other Sarah Lawrence kids, and he agreed. Daniel said, I didn't want to go back home, and this was my alternative. Part of why I got into a cult was because I had no idea how one finds a place to live in New York, end quote. And then Santos, poor, sweet Santos, whose entire family was affected by this. His parents were financially ruined, and eventually his two sisters sucked in by Larry. And when we meet them next episode, I know you will be as shocked as I was that Larry was able to pull them in as well. It's not an exaggeration, I promise you. It is so shocking that I have a hard time wrapping my head around it. Like Claudia, Santos had struggled with depression and had attempted to complete suicide in high school. And Larry preyed on this. Larry would sometimes tell the kids that they had come together in part because of a shared obsession with taking their own lives. But he, and only he, could help them. He knew military techniques to help the mind, and he began counseling all of them, slowly controlling their young brains. Dude, you have no mental health background. You're a train wreck of a person. It's just icky. Larry then slowly began escalating and escalating. When it came time for winter break, and Isabella was to return home to her family for the holidays, Larry intercepted the night before Isabella was to leave. According to Isabella's aunt, Larry called her mother and said that Isabella had been sexually abused as a child by a family friend, and that if Isabella were to go home for break, she might commit suicide. Isabella's mother was taken aback. She was really close to her daughter, and she had never heard her say anything about an assault. Larry then doubled down and said, quote, "You let this happen to her." Her mom was distraught and confused and knew if this type of trauma had happened to her daughter, they were close enough. Isabella was given a regular safe space that she would have told her.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Larry was isolating Isabella. And within his grips, Isabella spent winter break with Larry, Talia, and Talia's boyfriend in a one-bedroom condo on East 93rd Street, owned by Lee Chen, an old friend of Larry's. According to The Cut, quote, Talia and her boyfriend slept in the living room while Isabella and Larry shared the bedroom. He controlled every aspect of our lives once we were in the apartment, the boyfriend says. When we ate, what we did, when we went to bed. Larry told Talia's boyfriend to stop taking his prescribed antipsychotic medication. The boyfriend was so disturbed by Larry's behavior that he broke up with Talia as soon as winter break ended. Which left Talia even more susceptible to her dad's brainwashing. I can only imagine that Larry may have even told her, "See, I know what's good for you. We only have each other." Their little student group was forming into a cult as Larry slowly sunk his teeth in deeper. And every morning that summer in the apartment on 93rd Street, Larry would start it the same way. He would blast The Who's Baba O'Reilly. This was intentional. Whether accurate or not, Larry didn't really care, because it was sending a clear message that these kids were in a teenage wasteland. Pete Townsend of The Who said that the song was about the absolute desolation of teenagers at Woodstock, where audience members were strung out on acid and 20 people had brain damage. So, not exactly a group of students thriving at Sarah Lawrence before he came along. However, Larry knew how to use this song as "You're in a teenage wasteland, and without my help and my guidance, you're not going to get out of it." To be honest, I love that song, though. I mean, it's pretty good. I've seen The Who in concert. Epic, epic, epic. I am way too young to love that, but it was great. Anywho, the trio returned to Sarah Lawrence after the winter break. Larry returned as well, like some fucking dedicated student. Like, if your buddy has a place in New York for you to stay, why are you going back to campus to live with your daughter and her friends? It is so unnerving. The school year played out with more counseling sessions and philosophical rants by Larry, and he even began recording the students during forced hours-long confession sessions. He would wear them down to the point where some would just make up a story of something bad they did in their youth, just to get Larry to stop the torture.
Leave me alone. Stop.
won't go with it. You can't take it. You want to behave so atrociously. You want to behave so criminally destructive, because that's what you admitted to doing all day today and yesterday. And then you've been trying to harm me entirely. Well, now you want to do that, and you want to act so intrusive, so disruptive for your criminal objective, then you just go with being videotaped, your behavior.
No, I don't want that.
Well, that's too bad. You can't control everybody. You're not in charge of the world.
I want that. Turn it off.
Please don't.
Turn it off.
You assaulted her. Why
turn
did you
it off. Her?
You assaulted her.
I didn't assault her.
It's on video. And now your outburst is. And it'll be a good thing for the police when they come.
What police?
So go ahead, continue. Show how you're out of control now. Show. Go ahead. Behave how you're out of control now and how it can't be helped.
I'm not out of control.
You said all day you were.
Yes, I've been feeling.
You just told us that 10 minutes ago.
Yes, I was feeling bad all day.
Okay, so why is that something that hurt people that are good to you?
I don't want to do it anymore.
Well, why were you hurting people that are good to you?
Because I had bad thoughts about myself. And
talk about them, go ahead.
I had bad thoughts about myself.
Like what?
And my parents sometimes. And I've been broken. I've been very broken. I feel bad.
So go to a hospital.
No, I want to get better.
See, then you say that, but you're hurting other people. You're really hurting other people.
I don't want to hurt people anymore.
And you're even dangerous for violence.
I've been very angry.
But that's not anybody else's problem. No, that doesn't give you the right to hurt anyone else, and no one else deserves to be hurt because of your problem.
I don't want to hurt anybody anymore.
When summer break rolled around, the group all moved back into the 93rd Street apartment in New York, and Larry began recruiting even more. Daniel, who was in the friend group and had joined in on Larry's sessions back at Sarah Lawrence, was contacted by Larry, and Larry asked him to meet him at Starbucks in New York City. He agreed, and Larry, with Claudia in tow, sat down with Daniel and convinced him to move into the apartment. Daniel was relieved to find a place to live in New York City, naive to how one finds a place. And not wanting to go home for the summer, this seemed like the perfect solution. So now the one-bedroom condo was crammed with four women and three men, all living rent-free and soaking up Larry's manipulation. At first, it seemed exciting with dinners out and then returning to the condo for arduous confession sessions and spiritual counsel, but they were led to believe that this was the way to a healthy lifestyle. Plus, again, they were living rent-free. Who wouldn't want that? They could commute to college, experience the excitement of Manhattan, and have access to Larry's seemingly endless wisdom and counsel. In Daniel's book memoir, Slaan and Woods 9, which is available now to read, his harrowing story, Daniel writes, quote, "All I wanted was to be like him. To never be unhappy or unsure about anything ever again." On a phone call with his father, his dad, learning of his new living situation, said, "It sounds kind of like a cult, Dan. It sounds like you're brainwashed or something." Larry's response to this after Daniel relayed the conversation with his father to him was, quote, "People are so negative about the word brainwashing. I don't see what's wrong with it. That is what I'm doing. I'm washing your brains. You should tell your dad that." End quote. The ever-confident and sinister Larry escalated his sexual abuse of the kids. I mean, he was already regularly sleeping with Isabella, but now started forcing Daniel, through his advice and wisdom, into unwanted sexual games. Daniel who you will remember, was questioning his sexuality. And Larry used this and his vulnerability for his own sadistic pleasure. According to Daniel in the New York Post, one night Larry called Daniel into the only bedroom in the tiny condo where Isabella was lying naked on the bed, and he told Daniel it was time that he instructed him on how to seduce a woman. Isabella would be that woman. With Gregorian chants playing in the background, Larry then showed Daniel how to pleasure her. Larry said, quote, "Sex, like everything in life, should be deliberate." And from there, it only escalated and escalated. Larry then began regularly forcing Daniel to have sex with Isabella while he watched. He then eventually joined in. And then, even more horrifying, he invited a friend from prison to join the group sex. Even when Daniel and Claudia studied abroad in 2011, Larry's sexual control had a stronghold. Over Skype, Larry would, and this is so culty, he would call a family meeting between the two where Larry would coach them through sex on the video chat. The video evidence of their sexual activity wouldn't end there, though. All of the group members were subject to Larry's demands of evidence through iPad recordings of sexual exploits he told them to commit when out of the condo. He told the girls, if you take a cab, tell the driver you'll pay him in sex, and then film it on the iPad and bring it back to me. Later, when they were forced into labor, if they went to Home Depot for supplies, he would tell them, offer a blowjob to one of the clerks working there in the back of the store, and then film it and bring it back to me. When Daniel returned from studying abroad, he eventually hit his breaking point after two horrendous events. And now I'm going to quote directly from The Cut, which is the most comprehensive reporting on this terrible case. Quote, Daniel experienced the worst of Larry's attentions his senior year. After Talia missed the application deadline for Stanford Law School, Larry accused Daniel of intentionally sabotaging his daughter by distracting her. In a confession session one night, Daniel denied having anything to do with the missed deadline. But unhappy with Daniel's denial, Larry crushed pieces of aluminum foil, trigger warning, into little balls and rolled them up inside a string of saran wrap, fashioning what Daniel described as a necklace of metal lumps. Larry called it a garrote, in front of the group. Larry ordered Daniel to wrap the contraption around his testicles and penis, and then Larry began twisting it. The metal cut off circulation to his genitals and dug into his flesh. It wasn't the first time Larry had shown flashes of violence. According to other sources, Larry would regularly abuse Santos, another kid that we're going to go heavily into in part 3. Larry would often put him in a sleeper hold until he passed out. And he would say to the 20-year-old, did the darkness envelop you? Once, after Daniel supposedly damaged the oven, Larry asked him to kneel and then stood over him with a knife and threatened to dismember him. Whew, this is so dark. On one of Daniel's final visits to the apartment, he told Larry he was still feeling unsure about his sexuality. Enough of this, Daniel remembers Larry replying. Go get one of your dresses, Larry told Isabella, in front of the assembled kids, and Larry told Daniel to put on the dress and retrieve the mail from the building's lobby. When he returned, Larry handed Daniel a dildo and ordered him to penetrate himself. Daniel followed Larry's command as his friends laughed at him. He said, "I was horrified and scared and crying." Larry had always told Daniel that everything that happened in the apartment was for his own good. But after that experience, Daniel finally found the courage to leave. In 2013, spring semester of his senior year, he acquired on-campus housing. He stopped responding to phone calls or emails from anyone living in the apartment. But as Daniel was packing up and leaving in 2013, Larry was luring more young people in. Young people with the most promising of futures. Young people who were two sisters of Santos. Santos, who was already soul-sucked by Larry's control into the cold. Can you imagine being a parent and devastatingly losing all three of your children to Larry's world of sex, abuse, and evil? Listen, guys, I didn't think this would be three parts, but I haven't even gotten close to getting to the trafficking over state lines, the sisters moving in, the hundreds of thousands stolen from one member's parents, the millions stolen from forced sex work, the trial, and so much more. So like I said, I hate to do this, but I'm going to leave you with this nightmare part two for this week. And next week, we will conclude with the final nail in the coffin episode on master manipulator Larry Ray. Thank you guys so much for listening. I really appreciate you. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave a 5-star rating and positive review wherever you listen. It really helps so much. It helps to get people to see it and listen to it. And I actually have met some cool people in Indianapolis that listen. So thank you guys so much. I love you. Bye. If you like Seven Deadly Sinners, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. And before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.